Join the Pop Life Podcast conversation. Follow us on Twitter at The Pop Life Podcast. Find us on iTunes at The Pop Life Podcast. Be sure to rate us, please, and find us on SoundCloud and share and like and subscribe. Thanks.
Welcome to the Pop Life Podcast, coming to you from the Crosby Collective Studio, starring your hosts, Jeffrey Sledge, Naima Cochran, and Sean Young. If it's top of mind in pop culture, it's up for discussion. Thank you for joining us this week. The Pop Life begins in 3, 2, 1.
All right, Pop Life Podcast. Today is September 22nd. No, 23rd? No, 24th.
Yeah,
24.
I said 24.
Three.
You said them all, nigga. You ran through the week.
I was going to keep going. 28, 29. You know, it's officially Libra season. Peace to me and all the Libras. Peace to Justin.
Oh, yeah.
Peace to Kim Kardashian. Peace to Snoop Dogg. Peace to T.I. Peace to Lil Wayne. Peace to Keisha Cole. Peace to, there's a bunch of us.
I see a theme here. Y'all a little off. A little bit.
Yeah, a little bit. We're a little trash. We're a little trash. You know what I'm saying? You're a little garbage. You know what I'm saying? But it's Libra season. It's officially fall. As they say, it's time to start dressing. Except it ain't nowhere to go.
Like, nowhere.
Nowhere to go, bro. Nowhere to go. I actually went out last. Just say the name is going to pop in a little while. She has some stuff to finish up. So me and Sean are starting the show. That's why you're not hearing her voice. But I actually went out last night. Me and my boy Malcolm, we went to Zona de Cuba.
Okay.
Which is a restaurant in the Bronx right off of, say, one block. I guess that's, what is that? I don't know if that's East or. One block off of Grand Concourse. It's owned by this guy named Fernando Mateo. Fernando Mateo, very interesting cat. He's the cat that was in the video when he was in front of the bodega and the guy walked up behind him and was like,
"Oh yeah. Okay,
That's Fernando Mateo.
That's his spot. Okay.
So Fernando is he is.
I know him as the cab dude. The cab dude.
He's the head of exactly. He's the head of the livery cab drivers. I guess a union or association. He's also the head of another kind of association like that, and he owns
the bodega
association, delivery association. He owned La Marina. He owned another restaurant which is very popular uptown called Papacitos, and he now owns when La Marina closed down, he moved over to the Bronx and opened this place called Zona de Cuba, which is on top of the old post office.
Okay.
So it's a rooftop joint. You can see like all of Harlem. You can see downtown. The view is beautiful. It's, you know, obviously it's based on Cuban. It's based on Cuba. I guess I thought he was Dominican, but maybe he's Cuban. I don't know. He's Latino for sure.
Yeah. You know, sometimes you gotta sprinkle a little fairy dust onto the menu, man.
I think he's Dominican, but regardless. Yeah. The food is very good. He runs a tight ship. They getting you in and out of there. You gotta make your reservation online. And it's hard to get a reservation there, especially now. Oh, it was before. It's a very popular place, but even more so now because obviously it's only outdoor seating. He has on the roof. It's like half outdoor and half indoor.
Got it.
So it's obviously less room. So it's tighter to get a reservation. That you can't wear athletic wear. You can't wear baseball hats. And they don't do none of that shit. So if you walk up in some basketball shorts, you're getting bricked.
Wow.
If you have a hat, you have to leave it down with the hostess. They're not playing.
All right. Well, look, God bless.
Yeah. And the food is really, really good. It's really pricey. It's a little pricey.
Well, listen, man, I mean, that's a part of
it.
So what he's doing is
keeping the riffraff out.
Yes. That's all that is. Those are just hurdles.
Yes.
You know, because when you have a certain price point, what you're least likely to get is the person who, I'm using air quotes, finds a bug in their food.
Yes.
Halfway, when they're like almost done with the food. You know what I'm
exactly.
saying?
Exactly. Like, and it's
beefing about, you know, beefing about the food, and it wasn't yeah. hot, and my drinks,
yeah.
and
yeah, exactly.
all that, you know.
I ain't even like these wings. I ain't yeah. paying for this shit.
Yeah.
So he's definitely keeping, you know, your man's and them away. But it was good. It's my first time there. It's been open for, I guess, maybe 2 years or at most. It's still a fairly new spot, but it was good. So, you know, that was my first time kind of being out of this spot like that, you know, in a while. So on a Wednesday night, he had a pretty good crowd there.
It's funny, man, because I was looking for outdoor space heaters for the deck. So I have a fire pit, but obviously I can't put that on a wooden deck.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
I was looking to get a new space heater, and basically dude was like, yo, the restaurants are buying them out.
Yeah.
Like, you can't even find them shits. Like, they like, yo, he said one dude came in and just bought 12. They had like 12. He bought all of them.
Like, give me all those.
Let me get that.
Yeah. And that, actually, it's funny that you bring that up, because I asked the waitress what they were going to do, you know, moving forward. You know, because in New York, for those who don't know, as of September 30th, if it doesn't move, it's supposed to be restaurants are allowed to have 25% indoor seating, and they still have the outdoor seating. But, of course, it's getting chillier and chillier, so by mid-October, you know, late October, it's going to be kind of tight for some of these spaces. And she said that Fernando's going to have, like, heated igloos. Because his outdoor space is actually even bigger than the indoor space. Like, he makes his money on the outdoor space because of the view and all that. So they're going to have, like, heated igloos where they'll still be able to kind of seat you outside even when it's pretty cold. So it's going to be I'm curious to see how they're going to do that.
Yeah, yeah.
But anyway, yes, that's enough for free advertising for Fernando. You know what I'm saying? I'm sorry, bro. Peace to my Raiders. We got y'all Sunday.
Yeah.
We got y'all Sunday.
Monday night.
The Raiders beat the Saints. I mean, it wasn't like the Raiders looked great. I mean, both teams are kind of going to be, I think, 9-7-ish this year. It doesn't look like either team is going to be dominant. What I found interesting, though, is that they fined John Gruden $100,000 for not wearing, he didn't wear a mask, like, almost the whole game. He's, like, walking around with no mask. Like, fam, what are you doing?
Yeah, there are actually several coaches that got hit with those, like, mm-hmm. really, really big fines. And, I mean, look, they have to do that, right?
Yeah.
Like, you can't just have them out here publicly ignoring basic workplace protocols. And also, as a I'm very interested to see what that means for the liability of the Raiders, right? Like, because ultimately he's still an employee. It's still a company. And how does that jive, you know, if you're a third string dude and you get COVID, you know.
Because the coach wouldn't wear the mask.
And so, yeah, like, that's a dicey workplace kind of situation, right, that you've opened yourself really up. So we'll see how it plays out.
Yeah, yeah. So that's that. And then the NBA is getting down to the wire. The Final Four teams, Miami Heat are playing the Celtics.
Celtics
in the conference finals. And on the other side, the Lakers are playing the Nuggets. Looks like the Heat, they up 3-1 now. Looks like that's pretty much a wrap. I think they're going to close that out either next game or game after. LeBron and them play tonight. We'll see if they can go up 3-1. If they goes 2-2 on the Nuggets side, it gets a little nervous.
Very nervous.
Yeah, yeah, because the Nuggets, they're young, but they got heart.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And they believe they can win. Have you been watching?
Yeah, I have been. You know, sometimes I'll kind of check in and out. I haven't been able to watch, like, I watched the whole game last night.
Okay.
I didn't watch the craziest thing is I actually forgot it was coming on. Like, you know, because there's really no advertising for the game. So I actually had just completely forgot that the Nuggets and Lakers played that night.
Yeah.
And my rhythm is off, you know, in terms of it being playoff basketball. Like, I'm kind of in football mode.
Yeah, because this isn't playoff basketball season.
Yeah, this is barely preseason. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, in a normal world, playoff basketball is in June.
Yeah, so
in May. You know, yeah, so exactly. Yeah, so keep up on that. I didn't even tell y'all last week, man, because I was, I was embarrassed, man. But I started watching The Pains.
Oh, the Tyler Perry House of Pains?
Yeah, you know they brought it back.
Yeah. Nah, it's you don't terrible. Need to be embarrassed. I mean, listen, it's
terrible.
But here's the thing, though. It's been terrible, right? like that's the beauty of the level of consistency of Tyler is that he's not interested in gaining new people. He's speaking to the people that fuck with him.
Yep, only.
You come to the paint, you come to watch that show to get exactly what it gave you.
Yep.
I was very surprised because I didn't realize that the kid who played Malik was that old.
Yeah, I think it was like 30.
Yo, nigga, I was like, yo, he went from looking like a fucking, you know, like a 13, 14-year-old kid to like an old nigga, like an old, old face nigga.
nigga face is old as shit.
Yo, I was like, this nigga drive an Oldsmobile?
I'm like, yo, are they dying and giving this nigga Beijing? I think that nigga hair got great on the low. Because that nigga, I don't know how long the show was off air, but he's saying he aged like 15 years.
Yeah,
he looked 3 years.
He, you know what, man? He lost weight, and that happens, you know. Exactly. So when he lost the weight, and then you know there is a part when you kind of get to around that 27 to 30 space, man, you can't really play a teenager anymore.
Yeah, like, and it's crazy because he's supposed to be playing a college student, and this nigga he looks 30.
He legitimately looks like he taking out life insurance policies. Perfect. And he sent his little $73.15 check.
You know what I'm saying?
Down to the insurance man.
He got a couple kids. He going to basketball practice on Saturday morning. Like that nigga's a grown man.
You know all the way grown.
So that's weird. And then, but you know, to his credit, God bless, he got the whole cast back, including Lance Gross. Like he got. All of them came back for the
No disrespect, but like
what else are they doing, right?
I mean, I say that as a working man. Like I say that with no shame.
Yeah.
Like there's no shame in going to work, man.
Last
time I checked, like putting food on your table is still putting food on your table.
However you gotta do it.
And Tyler actually has the ability to do things that other places can't do.
Absolutely.
Like he can literally, like he owns the property.
Yeah.
So they have a campus lifestyle. Like you could come on there, dude, they could blow through like fucking a season in a month.
Yeah. They probably did.
That's what I'm saying. They probably came in, went on lockdown for 30 days. They might have been blowing through 2 episodes a day. Who knows?
Yeah, yeah. They probably were. Maybe 3. Shit, you know?
Yeah.
Y'all wanna do one more?
especially because they have chemistry. These are professional actors. They all have stage talent. These are not like newbies. Like these are not people that it's gonna take a long time. You know, they're gonna know their lines, they're gonna hit their marks, they're gonna be able to go off cue when they know it's the right thing to do.
Yeah.
I get it. It's an easy show. It's an easy watch. I'm happy for them, man. Why not?
Yeah, yeah. And you can tell when you watch that there are definitely times where they're ad-libbing.
Oh, totally.
Like Tyler's kind of. I think it's the point now where Tyler's kind of giving them the premise, but a lot of the actual lines are they're just kind of
going. Tyler might be looking at that shit from like a auto cam from
his TV desk. Monitor from his crib.
He's
50, 60 miles away.
He ain't doing that shit. I can't imagine Tyler's in there with his hat on backwards, with the slate.
Exactly. You know? So God bless it. You know, it's good and terrible, but I, like you said, I'm going to watch it all the way through to see what happens. Like you said, everybody came back. The little girl, China McClain, she's probably like 20, 21 now. She's there.
She's a young woman now.
She's a young woman now, yeah. So, you know, Peace to the Pit. I hadn't watched the other one. What's it called? Like Arrested Development or something, or whatever. Assisted Living. I haven't watched that. But, yeah, I'm going to watch my pains. I'm going to be that old 68-year-old lady in the house drinking my tea with some medicine in it. Oh, that's the other thing. So, Peace to Miss Miriam. I told you I went to Atlanta a couple weeks ago. I'm actually going back Saturday to do some more work. But Miss Miriam was the black lady, I've mentioned her on the show before, who worked at the hotel I always stayed at.
Oh, yeah. I remember you talked about her.
Yeah. I love her to death. So, I actually went to lunch in that area. And so, I went by the candy store. I don't know if you remember. I used to buy these candies with, like, these Jack Daniels candies. There's Jack Daniels candies. There's Kahlua candies. These chocolate candies, they have, like, you know, a little liquor in them and shit. So I went by the store and bought her a couple boxes of them, and I was going to go surprise her because I haven't talked to her, been in touch with her. I haven't been traveling. And I went over there, and she don't work at the hotel no more, man.
They let her go?
Let her go, man. I didn't see anybody that I knew. I think they turned the whole staff over.
Like, they might have.
Even the parking lot guys, like, I know everybody there. I guess I stay all the time. I don't see anybody.
Is it the same owner of the hotel? They might have sold the hotel.
See, I don't know. That I don't know.
Yeah, so, they might have sold the hotel.
So it hurt my heart, man. And I never got her number. I just never got her number because I would always just see her at the hotel. And, like, who knew it was going to be a pandemic? So I just was like, oh, I'll just see her next time. So I went. I threw the damn boxes in the trash, man. I was like, these are for Miss Miriam, and if Miss Miriam can't get them, then
nobody else.
Nobody eating Miss Miriam candy on my watch, goddamn it. So Miss Miriam, if you're out there, I love you, I miss you. I tried to come see you and I guess give you a hug, but wanted to give you a gift. But, you know, peace to Miss Miriam, man. Did you want to mention Power?
Oh yeah, we can mention Power. There were two shows, so I kind of caught up with Power, Power 2, Ghost Book. You know, beautiful gowns, lovely gowns, amazing gowns. Look, I'm not hate watching, but I will watch the show. I will support it. I definitely feel like there's some meat there. In terms of following the story.
Now, what is the story actually? Because I haven't watched it all.
So it kind of picks up, not to give away too much it's only like episode 3 at this point. But so what it does is it ultimately immediately picks up. The timeline seems a little off.
Okay.
Because, you know, Tariq is at college now. Like, he's literally on campus.
Okay.
And so you're kind of like, well, wait a minute. When did that complete
transition?
Yeah, when
did he graduate high school and all that, yeah.
None of that is explained. So when they pick up, you know, James St. Patrick, Ghost isn't even in the ground yet. Like, he ain't even buried.
Wow.
So there is, there's an entire storyline that sort of encompasses him. It's sort of around him, and he's trying to, you know, fight for his mom, you know, to keep her out of prison for the murder of Ghost, because that's what they're saying. And then they're trying to frame her as a queenpin, to give her a queenpin statue.
Okay.
So, you know, legal Twitter has long since left the building.
Yeah, like they like this some bullshit.
They've long since left the chat on what the legal situations are, which is fine. You know, Meth and Mary are in there.
Now, who are they playing? Meth and Mary. So, I haven't watched it all.
Meth plays an attorney, a high-powered defense attorney, which is, look, Meth is great. I don't necessarily know that this is the best role for him.
Okay.
But, he's great. I'm happy for him. Mary plays basically a Tasha role. She's a wife of a kingpin.
Oh.
And she's now running shit because he's basically doing life.
Okay.
And so there's this very weird, you know, Tariq is the tutor of her nephew, who was a star basketball player at the university.
Hmm.
And it's just a lot of things where you're like, huh?
Yeah.
Are y'all sure? Like, yeah. And so long and the short of it is, there's a very weird scene that everybody kind of picked up on, which is she doesn't know who Tariq is. Like, she doesn't know who his people are.
Okay.
And everyone was kind of like, but y'all are like in the same borough, major players in the same street game.
Yeah,
you
would know Ghost and Tasha.
You would even if you didn't know them, you would know who they were, right? Yeah, so, you know, that was. But again, it's television. You know, look, God bless. I think Mary is good. I don't think that she's. And let me be clear, I'm not a director. This is no shots. But the character seems a bit kind of one-dimensional.
Okay.
Like she's always angry. Like, she's always, like, there's no real depth to her.
She's always just mad and shit.
Just mad. Just a scowl and just, you know, angry and 100 miles an hour. You know, it's a lot. It's a lot to take in. But, you know, again, it's television, right? So it is what it is. I'm going to watch it. Of course, you know, the gear is phenomenal. It looks like a video. Yeah.
Like, now what is the I forget her name, the youngest child, is she involved in this?
Yes, she looks like she's about 9 now, which is another fascinating thing, because I was like, dude, she was like 3 like last year. Like, exactly. what happened? Like,
now she in 4th grade.
That, yeah, like, nigga, she in middle school. What the fuck is going on? But she's in there. She's with the grandmother. So they're obviously going to have reoccurring roles.
Oh, so Debbie Morgan's back.
Debbie Morgan's back. Because remember, Tasha's going to court now, right? So she has custody. Yeah. She has custody of the youngest daughter. They're trying to figure this out. Tariq is trying to, you know, move weight to get, you know, money for the lawyer and use his connections to, you know, help his mom out. It's all this sort of,
it's a lot of shit.
It's a lot of moving parts. You again recognize that Tasha's like an awful parent, right? Like, she's just
a horrific
parent. but like I said, man, it's shot well. It comes on, you know, not everything, you know, needs to be, you know, Emmy nominated for me.
Yeah, you know what? Sometimes it's some bullshit, but you
it's
know
some
what?
Bullshit. And
we
I'm
enjoy
watching.
The, but we enjoy the bullshit. And I'm and saying, I, it's the same with me and the Pains. This is awful. Nothing makes sense. The Pains had moved to Florida. Now they're back in Atlanta. There's no explanation. Like, but you know what? I'm gonna watch the shit anyway.
There you go.
What else am I doing?
And I do want to give a shout out to Michael Rainey Jr., who I think is a really talented young man, and I really think it's going to be important for him to maybe break out this role a little bit over the next couple things. Maybe he should, you know, hopefully he can get some movie roles, some film roles, because I think that kid is really, really
good. Talented because it takes a lot, especially for a young kid. He's had 3 roles now. This one, the kid, the Ice Cube son in Barbershop.
Mm-hmm.
And what was the third one? Oh, my God. It was a third role. And he played this kid that we all hated.
Yeah.
Like, he was an asshole, but, like, that's hard to do. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
He's a kid, so I forget the third one. There was another role. It was like, this nigga's terrible. Like, every role, but, you know, but us. Yeah, but I do think he's actually a good actor.
Yeah.
And, you know, I want him to kind of do some more. Let's mention Deion Sanders.
Yes.
So, Neon Deion, Prime Time, however you want to call him. He won the Heisman, right? He won the Heisman.
No, he didn't.
He came in second place, but, like, a Hall of Famer, All Pro, phenomenal talent.
Two-sport athlete,
went on to become a, you know, big-time broadcaster and analyst for NFL, NFL Network. Has just taken a job, officially announced a job. He is the head coach at Jackson State University, which is a black college in Jackson, Mississippi. One of the older ones, been around forever. Has sent some people to the pros, including Walter Payton. And I just think this was a great thing. I'm hoping that it opens the door for maybe some more black athletes to, you know, if jobs open up, like, you know, for, or to kind of get more involved in other ways in black college athletics, because, you know, for those, you know, for the people who are a little younger, I mean, there was a time pre, I guess maybe like the mid to late 60s, there was a time where all black athletes, NBA, NFL, were coming from black schools because there was no integration. So yeah. any you know, black Hall of Fame athletes up until mid to late 60s were coming from black colleges. They had the lock on talent. That will never happen again, but it would be. I know there's a kid, I can't call his name. He was like the number two high school basketball recruit in the country, and he ended up going to Howard this season. This year, obviously, he's not playing.
Maker.
He's
the number two. He was the number two center, I believe, or he was a top ranked center. He was maybe a top 25 or a top 30 prospect.
Okay.
In general, like the overall class.
Yeah.
He committed to Howard.
Yeah, and then there's another kid, the number one recruit, number one guard anyway, Mikey Williams, I believe his name is.
Yeah.
And he was, this is all pre-COVID, but he was really toying with the idea of going to Hampton. I guess his parents are HBCU grads, and him and Maker even had like a little couple of Twitter exchanges, like, yo, like, I'm going to Howard, like, what you going to do? Again, I don't think he ended up committing anywhere because of COVID. But he was toying with it. I don't know if he was going to actually do it, but he seemed to be like genuinely thinking about it.
I mean, he also could have, you know, the cynic in me says maybe he was raising the price.
Well, yeah.
You know, either way, you know, God bless those kids. If they decide they want to go to HBCUs, then that's great. If they decide they do not want to go to HBCUs, I think that's okay too. I don't think we.
Yeah.
I'm very against the idea of black adults putting the onus on restructuring and redistributing wealth in colleges on the shoulders of a 17-year-old kid, 18-year-old
exactly.
kid.
Exactly. I just love the game. Again, I agree. It shouldn't be up to them to change things. But I do love that they're at least thinking of, at least making it part of their options.
Yes. Yes.
Then you can go do what they want to do, but like at least it's like they're talking about it. I saw some that Ocho Cinco, they asked Ocho Cinco would he join Deion if Deion called him to be on staff. And he said, no, I wouldn't do that, but I would go work at FAMU because he's also a Florida guy.
I was getting ready to say, yeah, totally makes sense. I mean, listen, you know, Deion has all of the flair you would want your coach to have. There is no living room in the United States of America that he can't walk into. I don't care if your parents are wealthy. I don't care if your parents still live on a dirt road in, you know, a two-bedroom house, right? Like, he can go into any room. His name will ring bells.
Yeah.
Nobody that you can think of in the past 25 years. He might be one of them. Deion might be a top 10 athlete of the last maybe 30, 40 years.
Absolutely.
You know what I'm saying? Like this is almost a household name for a particular generation, particularly of black folks. So he's in a he's in a circle of talent. You know, Mississippi, I would assume, I'm not a recruiting genius, but I would assume that being in Jackson, Mississippi, they are looking at kids from Mississippi, from Louisiana,
Alabama,
Tennessee. So they're in the, you know, they're basically in the mix on being able to go after talent. Now, I will say that there are going to be some cons to having someone like Deion.
Now, what are those?
In my opinion, you're asking, the rules don't really apply to people of Deion's talent level in general. And you're talking about someone who has been a, a superstar athlete since, you know,
the 80s.
Yeah, I was going to say since maybe he's like fucking 14. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like
the 80s.
You're talking about a guy who, and listen, this isn't any indication of sort of selfishness or anything like that, because you don't really hear his teammates talk about him in that way.
Yeah.
He's a cold-hearted football player. That's what he does. And but you know, Prime has had a couple of issues with compliance on the high school level.
Yeah,
there have been several stops for him where, you know, there have been financial issues at these schools. There's just always been a lot of smoke.
Yeah. There's always something.
You know, there's always something. You know, it's a new school. They just started the school 2 years ago. It's doesn't have accreditation. It's, you know, they don't really know where this is coming from. And so now, you know, we're talking about the NCAA where eligibility is the lifeblood of these kids. You know, they lose a year or two. You know, they don't get that film. They don't get to, you know, go and get a shot at the next level. But look, I think he's going to be fine. I mean, I think Jackson State is going to have someone really hard on compliance.
Yeah, yeah. And sure, to be like, Deion, you can't do that, bro.
And listen, the reality is that Deion, you can't do that. It's not really something that Deion Sanders has heard often in his life.
Yeah, you're right.
You know, thus the compliance issues on a high school.
Thus the issue.
like on a high school level, which, again, we're talking about high school football in Texas, which is a different animal in and of itself.
Yeah, it's a beast.
It's a beast. I really do wish him well. I think that he's going to be able to snag. He may not get a kid that's kind of going to Alabama right now, but he definitely could get a tier two key. Might be able to snatch a kid that might be going to Tennessee.
Or Mississippi State, or
maybe even Ole Miss. Who knows? Yeah. Right? Like, yeah. Depends. Yeah. So it'll all you know, kind of work itself out. And hopefully they're committed to him as well. And I hope that this isn't just a splash. Like, you're going to need 4 or 5 years, man, to really, develop a program.
Figure it out.
Don't come in here and then when shit get hard, you out.
Yeah, because he don't need the money. Whatever they're paying him, which is...
I can assure you the money that they're paying him is going to the custom JSU jackets that he's paying for, right? Like, this is... You remember that episode when Simi's like, do not take my pocket money?
Yeah,
like, that's literally what this is to him. This is what they call ashtray money, bro.
Exactly. Let's go get some new rims on the car. Some shit, you know what I'm saying? Yeah, but I, being a black college grad, obviously, like, I always try to pay attention to what's going on in that world. And
let me say last thing. I think that's his goal. I don't think his goal is to change JSU's program. I think his goal is to raise JSU's profile, show these HBCUs that we can do this and that they can go out there and kind of get those talented coaches that are swimming in special teams positions at places so they can start to build their resumes. Look at Juan Dixon. Juan is at a black school, right? Coppin State, because he was never really going to get that shot to kind of go in the league. But
University of Maryland, you know what I'm saying? He would have been, exactly. If I would have hired him, but he would have been an assistant.
He'd have been like a third assistant.
Exactly. An assistant to an assistant, you know what I'm saying? So peace to Deion. I'm wishing you well. I'm hoping this works out. I also saw that Nene's not coming back to the Real Housewives of Atlanta. I guess there was a contract dispute or whatever. But bottom line is that she's not coming back to the show this upcoming season. She announced it on air. Sounds like her and Andy, kind of couldn't work things out. They had, had issues previously, like her, kind of being physical with the cameraman and kind of being a little aggressive. And even last season, she was relegated. She was on the show, but she wasn't in every episode. In some episodes, she wasn't in them a lot. So I felt like this was, they were trying to figure this out anyway, how to maybe get her out of there. They replaced her with another woman. Some woman I haven't heard of, but she's an African woman, a Nigerian woman. And then the rest of the cast is going to come back. What'd you think about that?
This happens in any business. Sometimes you can't figure things out. That's okay, for either side, right? What she might be asking for is well within what she feels she's owed and deserves. And what might be way more than what the network feels makes financial sense or whatever the case might be. Also, too, I would just add, sometimes in business, and I'm speaking just as someone commentating, I don't have any personal, knowledge of their situation or the ins and outs of their inner workings. But sometimes just in business, relationships run their course, right? Like, we've seen this even in sports, right? Where it's like a head coach has been somewhere for like 8 years and the team really just isn't responding to them
anymore. Yeah, they're kind of tapped out.
Exactly. They're kind of checked out. They're kind of operating on autopilot. You know, she had gone away for a couple seasons. I don't know if that, impacted their bottom line.
I know that one season, this was 2-3 seasons ago now, that she wasn't on the show. Apparently, the ratings didn't really dip.
Well, I mean, that's kind of...
They weren't huge. It wasn't like they fell off. Like, when she wasn't there, it was still a very highly watched show on the channel.
That's sort of the point, right? So that's all of those things, I'm sure, are taken into consideration. What's the loss here versus the gain? Is it time for us to move on? And again, I think they take into consideration people's social media engagement, people's feeling. I think they all do the Q ratings where they bring in, focus groups to come in.
Absolutely.
And discuss. And they take all of that stuff into consideration.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we'll see. I mean, it's going to be very interesting to see. I don't know much you could talk about it, but I have been meaning to ask you like when it first started, but like, how have you guys been dealing with taping with, the COVID thing? Because I know when I first asked about it, it had just started, so nobody knew what the hell was going on. But obviously it's been, 6 months since the kind of initial shutdown, and people are making provisions to kind of figure out how to keep their business going. So like, what are you guys doing to like kind of keep the filming stuff going? Can you talk about it?
Yeah. I mean, I could touch on it. Everything varies, man. It varies by network. Some networks have more stringent policies. Others, I wouldn't say loose is probably the wrong word, but some networks are taking much more precautions than others. It's probably a better way to put it. Every time you shoot, you need to have a COVID policy. It's not something that you just wake up and say, hey, we're going to get this done, right? Like, you have to have a comprehensive policy in place that you send over and it gets approved.
Now, who does it get approved by? The network?
Networks.
Okay.
The networks. And listen, we've actually had some we've actually had some dealings with a company that their initial protocols was declined, right? They had to go back and revisit.
Really?
They had to go back and revisit. Now, it could have been language in the document. It could have been maybe they missed one or two steps, things like that. But for the most part, everyone is taking these massive precautions. A lot of shows are doing A lot of shows are doing these sort of like maybe quarantined editions where you can kind of have people tape themselves.
Do it in front of like a kind of like the blue screen.
Yeah, they can kind of do it in house. You have tons of people that are shutting down sets, right? Like if you're not a necessary person on that set, then you don't need to be there. You have tons of protocols in place, sanitizing stations. They're usually, I don't know about others, but you should have a medic on set, someone who is, checking temperatures, making sure that compliance is being ensured, wiping down, cleaning of bathrooms, what I'm saying? Like all of those sorts of things have to be there. They have to be in place. So it has some challenges, but we're still also.
And now when you're taping scenes now, obviously people have to be at least 6 feet away from each other. So it's not like that kind of like
close. Yeah, it's not, exactly. So when you look at, you can look at NBA, the NBA show, the pregame, right? Like
the interviews.
Yeah. They're all far apart, and that's all a part of, what this is. Obviously, technology eases that. You can, you can come in close. You can, do multiple cameras. There are a lot of different tricks that you can do to kind of alleviate the obvious gaps between people. But, you know, this is going to be the world we're living in for the next, you know, few years for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. You know what else? Just a sidebar. Like, when did the what happened to people's temperature, bro? Like, when we were young, it was 98.6. That was supposed to be the normal temperature. But now, like, it's like 91 and 90. Like, I'm like, when
nah,
is
this? Nah. Like, it should be. It shouldn't be.
No, man,
should.
I went to the gym. I went to the gym today, right? Uh-huh. And they check your temperature when you come in. And with the temperature gun, she put it up to my arm, and it said 91.5.
Okay.
Now, before, if my shit was 91.5, I'd probably be in hospital. Like, because that's like 6 degrees lower than I was brought up thinking it was supposed to be. So, what happened?
Well, first thing is, I don't think that's an accurate thermometer that she has at the gym. That's first thing. Second thing is, it may have been, you know, I have one of those digital thermometers. I'm always, for everything I do that's digital, I'm a 3x person, right? I do everything
do
3x. If I'm taking my blood pressure, if I put a blood pressure cuff on, I'm taking it 3x. If I'm using a temperature gauge, I'm doing it 3x. If I get on a scale, I'm doing it 3x. Like anything,
and
that
you'll get 3 different readings usually.
You should all. I normally go with the two. There's usually two that are the same. Okay. Or you can at minimum gauge it, right? So your shit might read 97, then your shit might read like 96. And your shit might read like 98. Like, I think it's okay to say that you're at 97, right?
I think it's a fair, right?
Like, so that's really what it is. But
even if it's 97, I thought it was 98.6 was the shit we grew up with. What happened to the 98.6?
even when your temperature is high, so if you go over that amount, because there's a number that if you go over, they'll quarantine you like on set.
Yeah.
So there's a number on set that if you register higher than that, they're going to tell you to go have a seat.
Yeah.
And they'll come back in 15 minutes. Okay. If your shit is still high, then you're not going to be allowed on the set at all. And in the case of like a Tyler Perry, they're testing and then quarantining. Wow. And then only the people that have tested negative are in the same thing with the NBA. They in a bubble.
Yeah,
that's what Tyler did with the studio. That's why he was able to churn out products.
Shows, because he's like, everybody gonna stay here.
Exactly.
Yeah. So yeah. Oh shit. I don't know. Maybe I read it wrong, but after my shit said 91.5, I was like, the hell? I might be dead walking in this motherfucker.
Yeah.
But peace to Blink Gym, because they're actually doing a good job, because they keep a count, so the gym doesn't get crowded. It's like they keep a count, and if they hit that. I don't know what the number is, but it's, I guess 50% capacity, whatever the gym is. If they hit that number, then you got to wait outside. It's like a club. You got to wait outside.
People come out,
and the two people go in.
It's how the supermarket used to be.
Yeah, yeah. They keep it on point. Like, you know, so peace to them. They got people walking around constantly checking people. Because I saw this is my second time going. The first time, there was a guy that kind of kept taking his mask down. And like, Shorty ran up on him, like, yo, bro, like, either you keep the mask up or you gotta go.
Or you got to go. You got to go.
You got to go.
This ain't this ain't up for debate, my nigga. Like,
yeah, exactly.
At all.
Yeah, so they've been on point. I respect what they're doing. I wanted to give a RIP to Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who passed away 2-3 days ago at the age of 87. From pancreatic cancer, I believe it was.
No, she. It wasn't 2-3 days ago. I think she passed away like Friday.
Was it Friday? Okay, yeah, it was like Friday. Friday weekend. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. Longtime Supreme Court justice, big fighter of civil rights, human rights, women's rights. Very liberal leaning. Was born in Brooklyn in Flatbush. And you know, went to school there, went to high school there, and went to Harvard, went to Cornell, taught at Columbia. So like had a storied career, and you know got kind of a later fame in her life in the past few years because somebody nicknamed her the notorious RBG.
Yeah.
And, you know, she took a, you know, she wants somebody, I think one of her clerks told her what it was because she didn't know. She was like, what? What the hell is that? And it's like, nah, it's just the notorious B.I.G. And he's from Brooklyn too. And she was like, oh, okay, word. You know, so then like she took a liking to that. And, you know, she's a very, very important woman in the history of this country. And it's scary now because, you know, her vote is what held a lot of the fuckery at bay.
Yeah.
And, of course, Trump's trying to push through another judge so he could basically do whatever he wants to do. Because now his goal is to get a judge to call the election results invalid because he knows he's going to lose. That's what my thought. Because I don't think he'd be going as hard if he didn't think he was going to win.
I think he'll be going as hard because this is like the Republican Party's wet dream, right? Like,
yeah.
like they're gonna get in 4 years, they're gonna have nominated 3 seats, bro.
Mm-hmm.
You know, three seats in four years
is crazy,
unreal. I think President Reagan might have been the last president to be able to do that, and I don't even know if it was in 4 years. It might have been through both of his terms.
Yeah, through eight. Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I mean, you know, I you know, we kind of talked about this initially on the group chat where I was like, oh, nah, they won't be able to push it through because I was under the impression, which apparently it has changed. I was
60%.
That it was that you needed 60 votes, which meant that they would have needed several Democrats to cross party lines on that vote. Mm-hmm. And I realized that now in 2017, it was changed to a simple majority, which tells me that, like, how did no one see this coming? Now, look, I'm not completely versed in Washington. I just don't know how anyone didn't see this coming, considering that, you know, Justice Ginsburg had already made it public that she had been a cancer survivor several times.
She came back two or three times on her.
Well into her 80s by this point. She's mm-hmm. well into her 80s. So I just like, how did they not anticipate that this was a possibility? And look, you know, maybe I'm wrong. I think it's very easy for me to just, you know, Monday morning quarterback what the Democrats did, but I think it's a worthwhile question for them to explain, like, how did you guys not see
this? Yeah, how did you not put and figure something
and
out?
This simple majority is, like, a very delicate situation, particularly for Supreme Court justices. So
it's all awful. It's awful. So I don't know what's going to happen.
Well, they're going to push them through. Whomever they decide, they can. They have the ability. There's literally
nothing. Yeah, because they would need some Republicans to say no.
Right now, one or two of them did, but not enough.
They need six, I think, to stop it.
So what they did was, initially, what several Republicans did was say that they should wait for the vote.
Yeah, after the election.
So apparently, McConnell and his folks sent out memos saying, you know, don't jump off the deep end one way or the other.
Okay.
And all of those Republicans, just about all of those Republicans who were saying that we should wait for that appointment are now saying we should bring it to a vote. And so they're softening on that. But listen, the reality is it doesn't matter. They're going to have to pick a side. And it's a Supreme Court justice. And if they could nominate somebody who is 40 years old, they're looking at a 30 to 40 year
run
on the bench. So
So it's just shit's all fucked up, man. You know, because you know your man is like, it's all fucked up, man. Like, because right now he's running straight up on racism. It's just racism. That's it. It's like, you know, like, keep these, you know, I'm you know, we're white, and you know, we've got to keep these niggas in check and these, you know, Spanish people in check. That's really kind of his agenda, because nothing else is popping. Like, it's over 200,000 dead with COVID. The economy's in the shitter. You know, everything is bad. So the only thing he's got, but as we're seeing more, you know, we knew it. I think most of us, anyway, as black people knew it, but I think a lot of white people are seeing it. Is that the Obama years were like a total anomaly, and racism didn't go away because of Michelle and Barack, and it actually came back stronger after they left, because people on that side are you know, first of all, a lot of them were holding their emotions about race because it was just in bad taste to do at that point. But now with Trump kind of not even fanning the flames, like putting gas on the shit, it's like, yo, be racist as fuck. And they're like, yeah, oh, you know, it's actually how I felt in all the time anyway. Even some of these people who you thought were a little more moderate are like, yeah, like, yeah, whatever. Like,
yeah. We're all seeing that. And I think that for most of us who are particularly those of a certain age, we didn't really grow up in, using air quotes, we didn't really grow up with a lot of diversity. So yeah. our guards are usually up.
Yep.
We're not very surprised at people who show themselves to be racist. I can probably count on my hand, one hand, the amount of white people that it would shock me if I found them to be racist, right? Yeah. Like that, that's pretty much it. I just don't really have a lot of expectations for that. And I think that, you know, not just, you know, history, when we think of it in terms of like a long time ago, but just modern history, right? Like in recent history, we can point to and identify all of these sorts of things. So, you know, we kind of, it is what it is, man.
Yeah, like you said, it is what it is. But it's really, you know, it's become part of, because of your man, because of Bunker Boy, it's really become part of the politics in this country, you know, more than it's been in years. I'm not going to say ever, but it's been years since racism has been that openly shifting change and shifting policy in this country. It's like, this really comes down to like, nah, we're gonna do what we can do to keep, you know, black people in check. We got you. He's got these militias. Even the militias during the Barack years, the militias were always around, but they were like up in Montana, you know what I'm saying, in Wyoming. They were like have these like kind of little camps in, you know, deep Georgia or deep Texas. But now, like, they walking down the street in New York City. They walking down the street in Chicago, wherever city is unrest. They're in Louisville.
They're being welcomed. And I
exactly.
Mean, I think what we have to remember is that is a part of American history and American culture, which is the deputization of white men in what I want to say, unrest, which is probably the wrong word, but at any point, right? Like as long as there is the idea that niggas are out of control.
Exactly.
Any white man with a gun will do.
Exactly.
And that's what we're seeing right now. And, you know, again, I'm unclear because, you know, there are these states, there are these sort of state laws versus these other laws. And like, how does, and so there's what we noticed, and again, what this presidency has shown us is that, like, basically all of the shit that we thought was based and rooted in checks and balances was really just protocol. It was really precedent. It was really just a motherfucker going by the book of the person who preceded them.
They weren't actual laws.
They weren't actual laws or rules or actual checks and balances. Like, there's no checks and balances when you have a fucking Republican president and a Republican Senate that could just simply push through with the majority a Supreme Court justice. There's just no, I mean, how is that checks and balances? So
Yeah. And what I've been, you know, talking to people about them, you know, of course people don't ever think, you know, people didn't think none of this shit could happen, but it's like, bro, if God forbid somehow we have to do another term, like, yo, you don't know, like, they might fuck around and, like, bring slavery back. Like, you don't, like I said, that sounds crazy. You don't know, bro. Like, you don't know, like, these motherfuckers, you don't know what these people are going to do because, like, look what they're already doing. You know what I'm saying? Like, like, don't take for granted that, like, oh, they would never do that. That's how we got here. Everybody saying, they would never do that. That's why we are in the space that we are. And like you said, now they got these, you know, roving militias popping through cities, you know, doing whatever they want to do, throwing people in the back of cars and disappearing them. Yo, ain't no telling, bro. Ain't no telling. Like, really?
Yeah. Yep.
So it's a fucking scary time, man. It's a fucking scary time. Let's get into this Breonna Taylor situation, I guess, for lack of a better term. So I'm gonna give a little breakdown of like what, because as awful as what's happened has been, I still think there's some people who don't know the story leading up to it. You know, it's kind of like people got bits and pieces of it, and they've kind of taken that and run with it. So I listened to a really good podcast. The New York Times has a podcast, and one of their podcasts, they did a two-part breakdown of her story. And this was pre-decision. So this came out like a little while ago. And they gave a breakdown of how it got to this point. So I just want to tell people this so you really know what happened. So obviously, Breonna Taylor, born and raised in Louisville, Texas, Louisville, Kentucky, 26 years old. She was born to a teen mom. Her mom was a teenager that they had to drop out of high school. So Breonna had like a real kind of thing about trying to graduate high school and trying to, you know, do better than what her mom had to do because her mom dropped out. So she graduates high school. She goes to University of Kentucky, and her subsequent boyfriend Kenneth Walker was going to Western Kentucky. They knew each other from Louisville, so they started dating. And they would be like on again, off again, on again, off again, on again, off again. And they were young. They were like, you know, she's only 26 when she was murdered. So they was just like 17, 18 years old. During some of the on again, off again, or actually like while they were kind of going back and forth, Breonna started dating this other kid named Jamarcus. I can't remember his last name, blanking out right now. And Jamarcus is like this real street cat. Selling drugs, getting locked up, doing all the dumb shit. So, you know, there was a time she was kind of dating both of them, trying to figure out what she wanted to do. And she really liked Kenneth, but she really liked, you know, Jamarcus because I guess, you know, he something about her and struck a chord in her. So they go back and forth, back and forth. And what happens is actually a tape of it. Breonna rents a car, and Jamarcus... She gives Jamarcus the keys to the car. Jamarcus gives the keys to the car to another guy, right? That guy subsequently gets murdered in the car. So there's actually tape on the podcast of the cops coming from to her house. And with that apartment she lived in at the time, Jamarcus lived there with her, talking about the murder. So, and the cops like, and they don't arrest anybody. But you kind of hear them talking. You hear like Jamarcus is a street cat. Those are brushes with the law. Now, I guess Breonna lived in a neighborhood that is pretty, you know, very crime infested and drug infested area. So the cops are always around there. So eventually, you know, moving forward, she breaks up with Jamarcus. He keeps getting locked up. She's like bailing him out of jail and all this other crazy shit. She eventually breaks up with him and goes back to Kenneth. Right. And then her and Kenneth decide that we're going to really do this. We're going to like start a family. She didn't have any children. We're going to start a family. We're going to really do this. And they're really in love and they're doing their thing. At the same time, the cops have started to do these intense stop and frisk stuff in that neighborhood. And they're in that neighborhood because they're trying to, like, quote unquote, stop the crime. So they're watching that apartment complex that Breonna lived in because it's a known trap house. And they're watching Jamarcus and they're watching other people kind of come in and out. And they notice that people come in and out Breonna's building and an apartment all the time because obviously Jamarcus is selling. So what happens is Breonna breaks up with Jamarcus, goes back to Kenneth. They're doing really good. They're in love, blah, blah, blah. Now, by the way, I'm not trying to disparage Breonna in any way as giving facts. She was an EMT. She was an EMT driver at first. She didn't like it. So she quit. And when she was with Jamarcus, she wasn't working at all. And he was doing D-boy shit. When she goes back to Kenneth, she actually gets the EMT job back. So she decides, like I said, she's trying to clean up her life. And so her and Kenneth are doing their thing. The cops get worried that this guy, Jamarcus, who they've been looking for, is selling drugs out of this apartment. They don't know that they've broken up. I don't know why, but they didn't know that they've broken up. Brianna also has a niece that lives with her sometimes. Mm-hmm. The cops apparently, allegedly, didn't know any of this. So they go to the apartment thinking Jamarcus is there. And that's how the whole kick door thing happens. Now, Kenneth says that when the cops knocked on the door, they didn't identify themselves. Now, the reason I bring that up is twofold. Because Kenneth and Jamarcus had beef. Because Jamarcus had run up on them at the house about a month or two previous to this. Okay. Because Jamarcus was still selling in the same complex where they lived. Yes, they even see him. So he'd be the old nigga, you know, with my girl, all that dumb shit, right? So that's why Kenneth pulled his gun out. He thought it was Jamarcus trying to come in because they had some issues before where Jamarcus had come to the door with some threatening shit. The cops, according to Kenneth, and they have audio of Kenneth telling his story to the police, and they have audio of the cop who got shot in the leg telling his story to the police. And they mirror, except for Kenneth says they didn't identify themselves. They said they banged on the door. Kenneth was like, actually, Brianna woke up first and was like, who is it? They said nothing. Then they said they banged on the door again. And then Kenneth woke up and they both were like, yo, who is it? They said nothing. He said a third time, boom, boom, boom. Who is it? They said nothing. That's when Kenneth grabbed the gun because, again, he thought it was Jamarcus and his niggas trying to come fuck with him.
Got it.
The cop, of course, claims that they did identify and they weren't hearing anything on the other side of the door. And, you know, I think a lot of people know what happened after that. They kick the door in. Kenneth shoots the cop in the leg, right? Because he thinks he doesn't know who it is because nobody identifies themselves. That cop actually, the cops behind him actually shoot. And then the cop that was getting charged, I didn't know this either. He actually ran outside and was shooting through the window. Trying to shoot him through the window.
Yes.
So he wasn't even standing in the doorway. And that's why they said, yo, you were so reckless and reckless endangerment. And that's why they charged him with shooting to hurt other people. Wanton.
Yeah, wanton.
Because he went outside and was just shooting at the building. So I wanted to kind of just lay that story, you know, the storyline out because people keep thinking, a lot of people keep still think that she was sleeping and was shot in her bed. That wasn't the case. That she was actually up because they wanted to see who the hell was coming in the door.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Kenneth shot one time, the cops returned with like a barrage of bullets and Brianna was hit and murdered. And then also they go in, they arrest Kenneth, right? They drag him out. They make Kenneth come out. He's got his hands up, and then they rescue him. But they never called EMTs or went in. And the cops claimed they didn't know Brianna was in the house. They thought it was just Kenneth by himself. So Brianna basically like died, bled out and died while they were arresting Kenneth outside. And so by the time the cops came inside, she was already gone.
Yeah,
I'm not saying right or wrong. I'm just trying
to get
details to the story. Like I said, because I don't think a lot of people know the details.
Yeah, no, I know. And listen, I'm not a police officer. I don't know what the procedure would be. It would seem to me that before you all go and take a suspect out to arrest them, that you clear the premises.
Yeah.
It would also seem to me that if you're a police department in a big city, which I would consider Louisville a big city,
Big enough.
Yeah, departments that are over like 25, 30, you know, cops, then I think that's a decent sized police force. I would think that you would have better investigation considering that you didn't realize that, like, like, to not know that the guy doesn't live there anymore tells me that you guys aren't really investigating this. You're kind of throwing spaghetti on a wall and trying to see what sticks.
Yep.
And this is about, you know, this is a part of policing that we've talked about before, which is like this sort of hero porn, which is, you know, the fucking guy in the Under Armour gear, kicking down the door, you know, with a, you know, long rifle and trying to, you know, it's like, there are multiple ways that you can get this done. Like, clearly no one is championing Jamarcus for terrorizing a fucking neighborhood and selling drugs, right? Like, but you can do a bit more of, you know, take your drink, nuanced investigations in this case. And it just doesn't seem like that was the case here, right? Like, it just seemed like they were trying to scoop up whomever and whatever, right? Like,
exactly.
But unfortunately, man, like, the part that is the worst part for me is that I think we all kind of knew that this outcome was going to happen.
Yeah.
I think anytime it takes you this long to bring an indictment, it's usually because you're looking for a reason to not charge people.
Yeah, I don't even know if they would have even brought an indictment if they hadn't kind of went national news. Like, they had moved on.
Well, we don't know, you know, someone else mentioned something very interesting, which is we don't know what was presented to the grand jury. We have no idea how or what evidence was presented, what evidence was withheld from the grand jury. The family received a $12 million settlement, and the speed at which that settlement came, that was my confirmation, my personal confirmation that there wasn't going to be any charges. And I felt like they were really doing that. I think the city did that as like basically a business decision, right? If we don't do this, you know, they're going to burn this fucking city down. And we're going to have way more than $12 million in property damage before it's all said and done. And, you know, I don't know what people were expecting from the criminal charges. I don't necessarily know that they were going to be charged with murder. Again, I'm not an attorney. I don't know that this falls under a murder. Because I mean, listen, I'm talking about a basic sort of book, textbook sort of way you would present a case. I don't know that this would fall under that. I do know that what happened here was...
Well, let me stop you on that, because that's another thing they said. So Kentucky has kind of a stand your ground-ish type of law, but they also have a law that if you fire first towards a police officer, that goes out the window. So that's why it was so imperative that they found some, and now they got 12 witnesses and only one witness said that he heard the police say police. The other 11 was like, nah, they just started shooting. And also, mind you, these are plainclothes cops. They weren't in police uniforms. So, again, even if Kenneth had seen them, he might not have known they were police. But my point to it is, that's why they said that they made it clear that Kenneth fired first and hit the cop. Because now the whole stand your fish, stop standing your ground thing and being able to charge the cops with some type of manslaughter goes out the window because he shot first. I'm not saying I agree. I'm saying what happened.
Exactly. So on top of that, I mean, you know, we get this charge and we know that this charge is ultimately a bullshit charge, right? It's really tantamount to throwing someone a bone. This guy isn't even a cop anymore. He's been fired, right? So they don't have any skin in the game. This is politics at its finest, right? Because what happens is the DA doesn't have to be on the shit side of a police union by actually charging current on-the-job police officers, right?
Exactly.
He now gets to throw this guy under the bus. This dude is basically looking at a 1-to-5.
Yep.
This if he got a $15,000 bond, this dude is probably going to get fucking 6 months probation.
Yeah,
or some shit like that.
Wear ankle bracelet or some shit.
Yeah, some bullshit, and that's really gonna be it, guys. Like, you know, and I guess I don't really know the word to use, because exhausted feels like the wrong word, but it is, I don't have anything new to add. Like, I don't have a poetic quote. Yeah. I don't have, you know, this really in-depth and engaged essay that I need to write about the wrongs of, like, I just don't have any of that right now. And, I kind of don't know what to do here.
Well, so, to me, and I haven't heard this conversation enough. I'm not saying that people aren't having it, but I don't think I've been hearing it enough. Each time one of these incidents happens, and there's too many to count, right, in the past 4 to 5 years, this loop kind of happens. You know, obviously, like, we as Black people are hurt, disgusted, torn apart about, you know, now watching. I mean, the only thing that could have made the Breonna thing worse was been if it was footage, right? But basically watching, you know, us being killed on film, you know, there's too many to name. It's always watch us get shot on film, watch us get shot in the back, so on and so on. But what I'm not seeing enough conversation about is, me being conspiracy sledge, I really believe that, especially now with Bunker Boy in office, I believe that there's an unwritten mandate. You could kill these niggas when you get the chance, because we have to scare them and keep them in check. And none of you will ever have to, you know, very few of you, very, very few of you will ever have to deal with consequences. You'll get a settlement. We'll move you to another job. You won't have to do any time. So shoot with impunity, because you're going to be all right. And I really believe that, because these murders are happening. Again, I know they always happen, but now because of people filming with their phones, we're seeing them more and more and more. But it's kind of like the same thing happens. Like, some cop shoots somebody for no reason, or even like the boy in who crossed lines from Illinois to Wisconsin, like, murdered two people, and now they're on Fox News saying he was just a scared kid. Like, it's like all these the powers that be are doing all these things to set it up. So, like, no matter what you do as a white person, or especially as a police officer, because never really a Black police officer, it's usually white police or Spanish police officers, if you kill somebody Black, there's not going to be any repercussions. To the point where we talked about last week, where the police force in Southern Los Angeles, and I'm sure it's in other places too, they got a gang within the cops, like, where they celebrate killing people.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you, but I think that probably, and I've said this before, since 9/11, I think the police have been cloaked in, you know, in this way where they're above reproach, right? Like, you can't question any of their tactics. You can't, like, saying anything about the police department is a direct indictment of your patriotism and how you feel about this country.
Absolutely.
And just sort of the pro police vibe and propaganda, quite frankly, right? Like, this is really what it is. They have always done this, but now they have been able to control the conversation in a way that shows them as these sort of sympathetic figures who are overworked and underpaid. And when they do get these situations, they're able to sort of pawn them off as, like, those are outliers, those are individuals, those are not there.
But
there is,
but not only that, outliers, individuals, but there's, but even they're not bad cops.
Yeah, I was gonna say,
they just made a mistake.
There's a pervasive culture, particularly in large police forces with strong unions, and those unions will and have always told those cops exactly what to say to paint the correct narrative. And like we said, there's nobody will get the benefit of the doubt like a cop coming to court in a uniform, right? Like, nobody's going to get the benefit of the doubt more than that guy. And he could be the fucking filthiest person on the planet, and he will be believed word for word. And
yep.
that's kind of where we are. Yeah. And now they have, you know, they're able to kind of use the accountability agenda that we have, because I don't think it's an anti-police agenda, right? Like, it's an accountability agenda, right? Like,
yeah.
Like, nigga, like, you can't just be out here wilding out.
Yeah. But now what's happened, which is more scary, we mentioned it earlier, exactly what you said is 1,000% correct. But now, because of Bunker Boy and Barr, that energy is now trickling down to citizens.
Yes,
so now,
well, yes,
that,
yes,
that is
yes,
malicious.
Yes.
These white men malicious walk yes. around with the same energy. Like, I'm a white man, so do what I say.
That's it. That's exactly what it is. We are coming to reclaim our power.
Exactly.
And we're going to do it by any means necessary.
And we're down with the cops, so it don't matter what we do. We ain't going to get in trouble either.
And we have the executive branch, the judicial, and the judicial branch on our side. So let's see how it works out for you.
Exactly.
And that's kind of where we are.
Yeah. And they look at all the protesters as, like, either, like you said, either niggas or nigga lovers. So it's even if you're white protesting, you're no... They look at us at the same level. Like, it's like, oh, you're white and protesting? You actually might be worse than these niggas, because you should know better. You should be on this side of the fence.
Oh, yeah.
So y'all going to catch it, too, which is what we see, and not, you know, them, like, brutalizing people up in Portland and all that shit. So this shit is it's a domino effect, man. Like, and I don't know if people quite understand, like, because, again, my point was, like, when these awful killings happen, they still seem to be kind of individualized, and I don't think people are putting together that Mike Brown, Tamir Rice, you know, Trayvon, Breonna, Alton Sterling, so on and so on. It's all part of the same thing. It's not individual. It's because they're in different parts of the country. It's all the same, bro. It's the same kind of mandate that has gone out. You know.
Yeah.
So, I don't have a solution. I mean, you know, getting Bunker Boy out of office is a start. I don't, you know, hopefully that will lead to some type of police reform, but I don't know.
I don't think it will. As we've seen, you know, even with the Department of Justice, with the, you know, wash, rinse, repeat mm-hmm. part of this, you know, which is, we know what else is going to happen. There's going to be a Department of Justice investigation. It'll be 3 years later, or 2 years later, they will cite that there was several issues where civil rights were violated from this police department. They've asked them to change these tactics, and you know, it's all for fluff. It's all for fluff. And then we're on to the next city with the next shooting and the next set of protests. And you know what? I'm glad that people have kept that energy. I'm glad that there are still people in the streets, and that people are still active and engaged in this, and are not just sitting idly by. I mean, I applauding those people.
Yeah, and I love that. I've actually posted a clip today. Bunker Boy went to Ruth Ginsburg's funeral, which is her casket, was outside, I guess maybe the Justice Building, and the crowd, like, booed him and started chanting, vote him out. And of course, he turned and hightailed it right away, because he can't, you know, he can't take any heat. So I love that. Like you said, like, let's keep that same energy through, not even through November, through the next several years, because we're going to need it.
Yeah.
So that's it. I want to wrap up on that. On that note, sorry, it's just a somber note, but we need to discuss it. You got anything else you want to do, man? Any shout-outs, anything?
Nah, I ain't really got no shout-outs, man. Oh, you know what? Shout-out to Justin. His birthday's coming up, man. So, I don't know, man. He, you know, God bless him, man. You know, he going to be 23, man, so he eager to go and be in the street, man. And I'm just like, bruh.
Ain't no streets.
I'm like, this... Nah, bruh. Nah, bro.
Yeah, you had to sit this I told him
straight up. I said, yo, man, you go to Georgia, when you come back, you're going to be in a hotel for 3-4 days. I'm telling you right now.
Yeah, deadass.
You better make a reservation and have them come do a test, a COVID test at the hotel, and, you know, then you can come back home.
Yeah, because you ain't going to be running down to Georgia and then running the streets.
And coming back in here.
Exactly.
No, sir. No, sir, my nigga. No, sir.
Well, we're seeing some postmates over to the Marriott.
You're not bringing back that 19 up in here.
Absolutely not. Yeah, man. So, yeah. Oh, anybody got a plug on that PlayStation 5? Let your boy know. I'm jumping back in the gaming world. I'm bringing my controller. I'm dusting off my controller. But yeah, that's it. We're gonna wrap up on that note. Y'all be safe out there. We'll see y'all next week.
Peace.
And that's what's popping in the world of entertainment. Thank you for listening to the Pop Life Podcast with Jeffrey, Naima, and Sean. Want to be a part of the show? We've got 3 ways you can get involved. Like us on Facebook, send us your burning questions to poplifepodcast@gmail.com, and follow us on Twitter @poplifepodcast.